guest today is Rachel Appel. Rachel, how are you?
Good. How are you, David?
I'm doing great. What do you do?
Well, I'm a technical evangelist for Microsoft out of the New York City office. So, of course, I do technical things and evangelism, making sure I make use of each word in the title, clearly.
Do anything with Azure?
Oh, of course.
Let's talk about Azure.
Yeah, Azure is pretty awesome. So what happens is we have Azure. It's our cloud. It serves as a back-end, robust back-end for all sorts of things that you might do, like apps, phone apps, Windows 8 apps, or even websites. Mm-hmm. You could power anything. So that's Azure for you.
All right. So how does Azure interact with phone apps?
Phone apps and Windows 8 apps.
They're pretty similar. So you're saying that interacts in the same way with both?
Same way with both. So what we would do is we would use Windows Azure, say their mobile services in particular, to power the back end for apps and websites. And nowadays, apps are considered modern apps or cross-platform apps. Nobody is out there just simply building one tiny app in a vacuum anymore. Okay. I mean, you do get the occasional small desktop app, but really where it's at is cross-platform. Even over on iOS and Android, all these devices, all the code bases on them need to connect to that central source so that folks can go from their Windows Phone device, maybe over to an iPad or to a Surface or even to their desktop, and they have that, you know, one back end. Easy deployment of only the front-end assets, and you have that centralized location for everything.
Let's paint a picture of what you said. So you talk about cross-platform. You're talking about the front-end having optional different platforms so that the front-end can run on an iOS device, can run on a Windows phone, can run on a desktop. You have that option. Back-end doesn't change.
Correct.
Azure makes that easier.
Yeah, Azure makes that easier. How? And in particular, the mobile services, which is not just SQL in the cloud or just some cloud services. It is a database underneath, plus push notifications, authentication, messaging, and all those kind of nice little features where if you traditionally wrote for our platforms, you would use SQL Server as a backend, but you didn't, and you got some SQL authentication, but you wouldn't get things like push notifications. You could do a little bit of, you know, scripting on the back end.
Describe push notifications.
Push notifications would be anytime you see, like, an email or what we call toast, the little pop-up notifications on your device or, you know, when a text comes in. They're real-time mechanisms for communication. So I could send you a little note in real-time. That would be a push notification. Great for games, right? So you have a game. A bunch of people could join into a game and then, like, maybe rock, paper, scissors, or we have, like, a rock, paper, Azure. Some of my fellow evangelists did that little game. So you can have something like push notification. So as everybody plays the game, these little notes pop up on their phone or their iPad or their whatever.
Okay,
their
so if you and I are playing the game, then I would be able to see your turn on my device right away.
Yeah,
because,
sure.
You'd be essentially pushing your turn up to the cloud, and then the cloud would be pushing what your turn was, the results of your turn, down to my device.
Yeah, exactly.
Through Azure Mobile Services.
Exactly.
Is that push sounds like the Azure knows about my device and it's directing things directly to it. Is it really like that?
Or because it does.
It does.
Because
okay, I'm somehow registering my device with that?
Yeah, that's what you do. As a developer using the, well, I'll call it WAMS, Windows Azure Mobile Services, using the WAMS APIs, you can register devices for accepting push notifications, and you can do that through code. And of course, once an app is deployed, you can bring that up as options for the user if they want to enable notifications and things like that. And if they do, then you could send it to their device, and off you go.
So it's nice
in that you don't just get SQL in the cloud. It's not just a data store, but you do get the data, and you get to manage and manipulate that data with the extra services like push notifications or even Windows Live Authentication and its integration with WAMS.
Okay.
It's actually, to go off on the authentication tangent, you could do things like, of course, Windows, the Microsoft account, formerly known as Windows Live.
Yeah.
You can, of course, authenticate with that.
Can you just stop renaming that, please?
Yeah, no, not really.
All right.
Not really.
Thanks. Thanks for nothing.
We hear your request. So things like authentication. Nowadays, modern apps that we have across devices and modern websites don't do the classic, you know, fill in a username, fill in a password, and we're going to keep that information.
Uh-huh.
What happens is we tend to use third-party authentication providers like
right.
the Microsoft account, Facebook, Google, Google Plus login, Twitter,
yep.
LinkedIn, like all those popular ones.
Yep, so you have some
and
single sign-on and
exactly.
federated identity.
Which
call
is,
out to some trusted identity source.
Yeah, exactly, which is like double whammy benefit here. One for the user because it's just a point-and-click sign-on for them.
Uh-huh.
They just click, they're in there. Also for the developer because it's a small API and it's often familiar to us using OAuth or Facebook or something like that.
Yeah.
And WAMS actually integrates with all of this. So you're talking like two lines of code and you can have that single sign-on.
Oh, really? Okay.
And, you know, you have a token for the back end to store your data and, you know, deal
I see.
With it that way.
So the WAMS does not directly... provide that single sign-on authentication or integration with Facebook, but it integrates with that.
Right, in the sense that you just download the WAMS APIs, and that's
okay.
in the APIs, and you could just make the method calls, and then off you go. You could like maybe say take a little snippet of HTML code
uh-huh.
that would show a Facebook login button.
Okay.
And when somebody clicks it, it would just you know call up the WAMS API, which would then
so it doesn't have
to
redirect it to Facebook. You could provide your own little Facebook embedded.
You could provide some
widget.
Of your own embedded stuff, or you could redirect it out to the other one. That's always an option.
Does
well.
That go through access control services at all?
It depends. You can actually use ACLs with like access control with Azure. Not necessarily WAMS in this manner. It's just
okay.
simply using the identity provider
okay.
at that point.
All right. It does help you also. WAMS also helps you just standard CRUD forms over data. It facilitates those kind of applications, right?
Yes, and in such a way that traditional development would be put up a SQL database, maybe get a DBA, or let's shoot from the hip and the developer is going to ruin it. I mean, do it. So you have that. So the developer goes into, you know, some server somewhere and is, you know, fudging around with SQL. And then, you know, it's SQL here, authentication there, other stuff here, not really consolidated or integrated. And with WAMS, what the developer can do. Oh, another problem with traditional development is SQL, actual structured query language.
Okay.
You not only have to know a little something about databases, it's also good to know things like indexes and SQL querying languages as well. And a lot of developers feel that there is an impedance mismatch
huh?
with this in that we use classes in code and objects in code, and SQL doesn't really do that. SQL gives you back a tabular data stream.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of a clunk there for some
yeah.
developers.
Right.
So,
ORMs are kind of a
right.
way
so ORMs are
gap.
A way to bridge that gap. But WAMS kind of takes a slightly different look in a NoSQL way. And with NoSQL meaning not only SQL.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't mean no SQL. It's
okay.
Not only SQL.
That's what it stands for.
So yeah. So those for those who don't know, it's not NoSQL, it's not only SQL. And with that, what we can do is when you create a WAMS service, it creates an underlying data store for you, and you can actually go in, say, C# code or even JavaScript, and I could create a class, say, in C# code, and I can have properties, like maybe a customer class with name, address, city, state, zip, all that good stuff
okay.
as properties.
We're creating this on a server?
No, we're creating this right in the client code.
In the client code,
right
okay.
in client
right.
code, right in C# code, say,
yep.
or JavaScript, but we'll go with some nice compiled C#.
Uh-huh.
We take that code, and once you run it, it will actually connect to the WAM service and then create the table right there for you.
It'll create the table.
It creates the table.
Wow.
And if I add a column to my class, it'll add the column in the WAM's table, the
oh.
underlying structure, which is very brilliant. I
yeah.
love this because there's the whole SQL step.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't need a DBA, why force yourself into DBA-style tools?
Yeah.
Now, I'm someone who came from the land of actual doing DBA work.
Mm.
So for me, it's not a problem. But from doing that DBA work, I know it is for a lot of developers, and they really don't like the clunkiness of that.
We get spoiled by the IDE and Visual Studio
and that.
As compared to the SQL tools.
Yeah, things like that, you know, the different tooling and stuff like that. That's
And also the redundant coding as well. You've got to create that column in your that
exactly.
property class and then manually go and create that column. And you're saying this takes care of it for us.
Right, and in addition to that, what do you do with the DDL script?
That's the data definition language.
Data definition language. So you need to keep like text copies of the .sql.
That's
script,
what Datadude is
and,
for.
And then put right or use Datadude, put it in source control.
Yeah.
You know, all that kind of stuff. Here with WAMS, no need really to do that.
Interesting.
Not only can I control the schema by my client code, which by the way, if I make a property that's, say, a date-time data type, it'll infer the type and just make a date-time.
Okay.
So, which is nice. And you don't have to worry about, you know, all that kind of, you know, figuring this out when you're doing the database. You can naturally do it in the code.
Interesting.
And then once we get our database set up, and you can do it this way, but you can actually also go set it up on the server side if you want to. I can actually take SQL Management Studio and hook it up to the underlying database and crank out all the SQL I want if that's how you roll, right? You could do that.
Yep.
But what we can also do, and this is awesome for the cross-platform story. Now, of course, so I've done the SQL stuff. I've done the compiled stuff.
Let me ask you real quick before you go on. Move on. You keep saying SQL Server. Is that always going to be the back end behind Azure Mobile Services? WAMS?
It is. However, there is an optional data store called Blob Storage.
Yep.
So this way I could keep all my standard issue data types in a standard issue WAMS SQL database. But if I'm going to use blobs and lots of blobs, you know, I have a media intensive app, then you wouldn't want to store it there. You might want to put it in Blob Storage. It's more scalable.
And WAMS supports querying and updating.
And WAMS supports querying and updating through with the blobs as well.
Okay.
So it's an in-tandem
Does it support
service.
Things like Oracle or MySQL or...
None of that at this time. It's all our SQL behind.
How about Azure Table Storage?
You can also do Azure Table Storage. That is a separate component, but you can still, you know, use the WAMS API and then just hook into the standard Azure APIs as well.
Okay.
So you can use the whole Azure family that way.
Okay.
So,
all right, go ahead. I'm going to interrupt you there. Go ahead and move on.
Yeah, sure. But back to WAMS specifically, this cross-platform story is that I come from the land of Microsoft development primarily. I've done, you know, other development as well. So I do SQL, our compiled languages, and I also do JavaScript because I'm a heavy web developer. Now, folks that are either strictly web, mobile web, or on other platforms might work in a little bit of a different manner. And they might rely, which they do, a little bit heavier on JavaScript, especially Node folks, you know, folks maybe from Ruby backgrounds, things like that. So what you can do with WAMS, instead of, or in addition to, you can, instead of just doing SQL, you can actually write JavaScript. And you create server-side JavaScript. Say, whenever you insert a record, I can create a function called insert, give it a set of parameters that's predefined, and every time someone inserts some data into the WAMS table, that code would run. So basically setting up constraints, validation, and what would be triggers.
Oh, okay.
But without the crazy nastiness of triggers, they always go downhill.
They're hard to debug.
They're very hard to debug, and developers are either trigger happy or they're like trigger hateful. And there's no nice middle ground. It's one of those overly abused technologies that we have. You know, and of course they are. They're very difficult to trace. And
debug. They're an unobvious side effect.
That is the whole deal with debugging.
Is when you're in the middle of updates, something happened, some weird side effect happened. Why is that? Well, it's because of this hidden thing, this hidden trigger that I didn't know about. Often
that's the biggest thing. You just don't know unless you're the DBA.
But JavaScript code is a separate component, a separate module on the server. I see that.
Yeah.
As a developer, I can
see it. Yeah, and so it runs on top of Node, which is pretty awesome. Yeah, so you can just, you know, just kick at JavaScript. You know, throw it out there. You can.
I like the idea that you can run JavaScript on the server and the client, because then you have the same validation code on both.
Exactly.
And client for convenience. And server side
for the real validation
that nobody can circumvent, or it's harder to circumvent anyway. And you don't have to rewrite that.
Exactly, exactly.
You just copy it.
That's pretty awesome that we could do that. And then, of course, those that come from the other platforms, it's more intuitive to them, more natural to them.
If you're a JavaScript person,
JavaScript,
that's easier for you.
Well, JavaScript's pretty open, so that's, there's that.
I should know it better than I do. I'm getting better.
JavaScript, it's different for people who come from the compiled side.
Yep.
You know, if you're heavy in compilation, then taking those handcuffs off, you don't know what to do with your hands once they're unbound. So you're free now.
Now you're painting pictures.
Yeah, now you're painting pictures. JavaScript lets you do whatever you want, and that's, it's a little freedom a lot of people are not used to, and they get it, and wow, what to do. So, but JavaScript on the the server, on the client, doesn't matter. You know, you can mix and match, but that's it. It's really nice. It's very turnkey. So I just go log into the Azure portal. It's a web portal.
Yep.
Point and click, tell it to create a database. It does it, or create a service which creates the database. And then I just start writing code, literally. And, you know, you don't even have to write code. There's templates there. Once I create the service, then you can just go and download the code that would connect to the service.
That service, is that a that's a web service, right? Is that a SOAP service, a REST service? What is that?
There is a REST service that runs on top of your, like a REST API that runs on top of your WAMS service. But it's... when we say service, it's not necessarily web service. It's just a service like an Azure service.
Okay.
As a general, it's more of a general term.
Okay.
But
when I devices connect to it,
when a device connects
to
it,
service,
what happens is
the REST service. I mean,
you can just hit it with REST calls.
Okay.
But I'm talking about the API in this particular case.
Okay.
So with the API, what you could do is open up Visual Studio. You make a reference to the WAMS service, which is the API.
Okay.
And then I can do any kind of like insert, update, delete, do my classes, all that kind of stuff that
I
you
see.
Would do,
okay.
Which is really nice. And it's also, of course, 100% async. So you get everything is an async call, insert async, delete async, all those things, of course, because we have the occasionally connected cross-platform
development. We have
development.
A lot of those.
That's a lot of that
anymore.
That
you're calling it mobile services implies that we're using mobile, and that almost always is
exactly
occasionally connected.
And so it's async where it's not the, you know, not your dad's async, right? Where it was a little bit harder and you had to do a lot more legwork. No, not really. All you have to do is you call the method with the word async on the end, and basically it just goes off and takes care of everything for you, which is nice. You don't have to worry about writing any infrastructure code for that.
Right.
And I thought in, like, say, the last version or two of .NET, that async was not that bad compared to implementations before. But now it's even easier.
They have made .NET.
They've been going better and better.
Async a lot easier with some of the syntactic sugar they put on top
of
it. I don't know if it's any less complicated, but it just made it easier to code.
Okay. Well, in this case, it is like way less. You just a single call, just insert a sync. Let me know when you're done.
Yeah, from the client side, you're absolutely right.
From the client side.
So anything else on this on mobile services? We should bring up.
I'll tell you what. If you're starting like any kind of new project, and I'll tell you what. So you log into the Windows Azure portal, and you can do all your admin that you need through the web administration portal. And when you do that,
that's at WindowsAzure.com.
Yeah, WindowsAzure.com. When you create your mobile service, you can go into this little dashboard, and it has code templates. So you can just download a Visual Studio project that has basically what would be the connection, the equivalent of a connection string and all that. You don't really use a connection string, but the same equivalent for WAMS, and a little bit of template code just to get you started, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So I just get like a little project out of the box, and we've never done that with SQL. I never done that with anything. We just, you know, I start my service, get it, you know, just barely running, and then you have this template in which you give a couple of points and clicks, and you're actually up and running with an app. And it's not just templates for, say, Windows. There's Windows Phone, Windows 8, iOS, and Android. So it hits all of them. So if I were an iOS developer, you know, and I have Xcode installed, I can just download the iOS template to run, which is pretty awesome.
Oh, nice.
And it would have the same thing, like the same, you know, references to the API and all that good stuff. On the alternate, if you don't want to use the SDK, but the SDK is so easy and clean and nice, I would really suggest it. But if for some reason you can't or don't want to, you can still, if I create a table, I can still hit that with just using REST, like a REST-based syntax.
Okay.
And what happens is Azure creates a URL for you, creates keys for security and all that good stuff. Hmm. But it gives you a REST URL and a certain convention that you would use to access the underlying data through like a URL-based schema. So you can, it just automatically implements a REST interface for you based on what you created as a table. So if I made like a customer, I made an Azure service with a customer table in it, name, address, and all that good stuff, I can use a REST style syntax to access the data that way, which is pretty handy in so many cases, and especially if you're just going with JavaScript.
So the SDK is a great way to learn this stuff and get started with this stuff. Are there other learning resources? that people can tap into?
Yeah, the easiest is just at windowsazure.com. Uh-huh. Right on the homepage, before you even log into the portal, there's the step-by-step samples. And they do the classic little to-do item, which is very simple, just, you know, to do. Much better than Northwind. At least we have sample variety anymore. And that's, you just download a little sample to-do item project. It's right to the point, no clutter, and you can clearly see what's going on. And you're talking like, I think maybe 75 lines of code, you know, and that's with the usings in there and everything else.
I like
if
the
it's
simplicity.
A C sharp or something, right? It's a really, it's a small project, but it's very easy to learn just by downloading a sample, which half the time you download a sample and you all you do is like sit there for 20 minutes trying to get it configured so it'll run. In this case, the stuff actually runs when you press F5 without giving you a problem. So right there, you're that far ahead of everyone else at that point.
Do you have an online presence?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
So I have rachelappel.com is my blog, and at rachelappel on Twitter, and Facebook, LinkedIn, all that good stuff, and just general web carousing, all that.
You're loud on the internet.
Yeah, I'm loud on the internet. I'm loud everywhere. You know that.
Your words, not mine. Rachel, thank you so much.
Thanks, Dave. Summit, where we bring to you technology and friends. It's what it's all about this week.